The following program originally aired in May of 2017. Richard Yonk is one of 50 authors contributing to Aftershock, reflecting on 50 years of Alvin Toffler's Future Shock. Welcome to Seeking Delphi. The future lives here. Thank you for joining me. I'm Mark Sackler. This is episode number 12, The Emotional Machine. In our last program, futurist Ian Pearson stated his case for the assertion that artificial intelligence will create more jobs than it replaces. Clearly, not everyone shares that view. One of the key factors Pearson sees in his argument is the need to use humans as a go-between, linking artificial intelligence and patients or consumers. To be an emotional interface, effectively, reading and empathetically reacting. But what if artificial intelligence could read human emotion and even express it? In his book, Heart of the Machine, author Richard Yonk deals with exactly this question. Great strides have already been made in enabling computer programs linked to sensors and cameras to read and react to human emotions. And while the ability for robots or avatars to express emotions is at best in a rudimentary and nascent stage, and the ability to experience it is a vague possibility set somewhere in the distant future, the age of emotional, affective computing has begun. Effective computing, what is it and where is it going, is the subject of The Heart of the Machine. I put in a call to Richard Yonk at his office in Seattle to discuss the views he expresses in the book. Let's listen. I'm speaking with Richard Yonk, author of The Heart of the Machine. Richard, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Mark.
To begin with, tell us a little bit about who you are and what brought you to write The Heart of the Machine.
My name is Richard Yonk. I'm a consulting futurist, speaker, and author with Intelligent Future Consulting in Seattle. And we focus on helping businesses and audiences and readers understand different opportunities and challenges that are coming up in the future in order to be able to create positive outcomes. And in the course of that, one of the things I do is write for a range of different publications about emerging technologies, disruptive technologies, and some of the issues that arise out of those. And about 3 years ago, maybe it's more now, I had written a number of pieces that were around the general topic of effective computing. To some of your readers, or listeners rather, might be more recognizable as emotional AI or emotionally aware systems. And what was really evident to me, both in terms of the other articles that I was reading and even the space that I had for developing my own, was there were a range of different stories, a range of different issues that there was simply no time to adequately address and get into in that space, in that medium. And so I started developing the book, and 100,000 finished words later, here we are.
Richard, could you just give our listeners a little deeper definition of what affective computing is and tell us why you think it's important?
Absolutely. Thank you. It's a great question. It's really the initial and primary one when it comes to this topic. Effective computing is a relatively new branch of computer science and more specifically artificial intelligence that arose out of work from MIT Media Lab middle of the 1990s. There was some other work being done, but that's really seen very much as kind of the launch point. And these are systems, computer systems basically, that can read, interpret, potentially replicate or even influence human emotion. And the reason this is very important, as I get into early on in the book, is that we've had this progression over the many decades, and really it goes back a lot further in terms of technological evolution, in which we create interfaces to operate more and more sophisticated technology. It's necessary because, as a technologist wrote a number of decades back, the greater the difference between two entities, the greater the need for sophisticated interface between them. And so here we have technology, we have computers, we have essentially systems that operate by moving electrons around. This is not how we interact, how we communicate with one another, and we need interfaces to be able to do this for us, to be able to make these easier and easier. And it's been following a progression until now. Today we're in an era where we're working with natural user interfaces, touch screens, voice recognition, facial recognition, gesture. And all of these are this continuing desire and need, as we have more and more processing power, to make our systems work on our terms, to make them essentially be the tools that we need them to be, not have to make us spend literally hours and hours learning arcane commands to be able to operate something as simple as a word processor from, say, 40 years ago. It's something where we want to just be able to get on with the task and do it. And emotion is essentially the next logical extension of this. It's the next point in this progression of natural user interfaces, where systems will be more and more capable of recognizing our emotional state and incorporating this into the technology, whether it's a software package, whether it's a robot that is interacting in some either way in a facility or in a social type of situation, that these different technologies begin to have an emotional awareness of us. That is not the same as saying that they experience emotion.
So extending from that, give us a brief overview of just how far this technology has progressed to date. Where are we right now?
Absolutely. In terms of where we are today, the technology has progressed quite rapidly, due in large part to some major advances that were made as of the beginning of about the mid-2000s, in terms of having neural networks be able to achieve the level of sophistication to work and rapidly be able to incorporate training data for different modes of how we express emotion. We express emotion through a range of different means, through facial expression, through vocal inflection, our gestures, our posture. All of these tell other people a little bit about our current emotional state. It's not 100% certain for people. It's not going to be 100% for machines or computers either, but when we look at a person raise an eyebrow at a particular point in the conversation, it's indicative of a particular state of mind, a particular opinion at that point, and it informs other people, and it's coming to be able to inform these systems as well. So to talk a little bit about how far it has come, we are now at the point where probably the most developed of these systems fall in the range of facial emotion analytics, where they are essentially looking at different points on a person's face, identifying those, mapping them to a taxonomy or a structure that identifies and specifies human emotion based on facial expression. This is based on some work that was done in the 70s and 80s by a psychologist named Paul Ekman. And from there, then a percentage of likelihood, a probability of what emotion that person is experiencing is then assigned. So that's essentially how these technologies operate, or at least facial expression recognition. And in this case, it's been being used for a good decade now in terms of fields such as marketing, branding, product testing, audience sentiment and so forth. And it's starting now to come more and more into a range of other fields, such as the retail space. And we see automakers looking to incorporate a degree of this technology themselves in order to try to maintain the safest and most comfortable experience for their passengers.
Expanding on the consumer issues that you just touched on here, let's look at a scenario, a potential real-life situation. A Swedish company recently announced they're opening a fully automated convenience store in Shanghai. No store clerks, no cashiers, everything fully automated. In your book, you suggested a scenario where artificial intelligence could read the emotional state of a consumer and possibly push products on them. That comes off maybe as a little bit creepy. I mean, if a human store clerk reads your body language and asks if you need something, that's maybe a good thing. But it's not necessarily something people are going to warm up to when it's done in this manner with artificial intelligence. There's something you talk about in the book about that called the uncanny valley. So what's the uncanny valley and how does it come into play in a scenario like this?
Well, just as a very brief intro for your listeners about what the uncanny valley is, there was a paper a number of decades ago by Masahiro Mori exploring what ends up in English translating into the uncanny valley, an expression of a recognition that is certain entities, and we've more recently looked at these as being as things like animated characters, robots, and so forth, as they get to a certain point of being extremely similar to people or even other animals, that we reach a point where we identify with them better and better as they sort of climb up this slope, and then all of a sudden, at a certain point, they get so similar that it evokes a definite creepy response from us. There's a number of theories about why this is, but essentially, it suggests as well within the emotion sphere that when we get to a point where these systems are able to interact with us at a certain level of sophistication, that they actually might it'll be those little tweaks, those little things that aren't quite right, aren't quite the way a person would do it, that are yes, going to very possibly creep us out.
Let's go beyond the ability to perceive human emotion now, because the ultimate issue, which you do discuss later in your book, is that there might be a point in time that artificial intelligence can actually express and perhaps even experience human emotion. So the question then is, do you think we'll ever get to the point where artificial intelligence, a robot, whatever of some sort, might actually pass what you might call the equivalent of an emotional Turing test? Will we get there?
As a fabulous question, and it's really rather nuanced, I think, in terms of how many different areas we could explore with from there. Right now, these are systems that are simply applying what we look at in terms of AI and neural networks. We refer to simply as pattern recognition. When a machine looks at images, looks at a range of different vocal patterns and so forth, they're applying mathematical algorithms that essentially recognize and identify patterns. This is rather different from what we do. We are ourselves a very sophisticated form of pattern recognition system, but we also, within the emotional sphere, we experience emotions originally. It comes out of our endocrine system. They're very, very based in our physiology. And over time, over millions of years of evolution, these became integrated with our neocortex as that developed and became more and more accessible, and actually ended up playing more and more of a role in terms of how it influences our decision-making processes. Now, systems may AI may eventually need something like this in order to get past a certain threshold of intelligence. Part of the question becomes, can it do so? And while we can look at all kinds of different ways to essentially replicate an emotional response, the actual act of experiencing emotion, first of all, requires a level of consciousness and it's a level of self-awareness that machines simply do not yet have. They may at a certain time, but at the same time, they even if they do, they may not be able to physically experience emotion in a comparable way to how we do because they don't have anything like the same physiology. Even if we try to create sensors that emulate certain aspects of our internal systems that feel this, that convey to us the sense of hair raising on the back of our neck, butterflies in our stomach, different things that we trembling in our arms, things that we feel in response to different things in the world and then eventually, according to certain theories, label and identify as a particular emotion. This is going to be really, really challenging, I think, for something that initiates out of an entirely different substrate, coming from something like silicone as opposed to beginning from biological cells. So that I think that's going to be probably a big, big challenge. If I can just go off on a second track for a moment, that said, we have this tendency, we've already shown it with a range of different aspects of technologies in our world, where we kind of fill in a bunch of the gaps when it comes to things having an emotional life or machines having a sense of set awareness or anything like that. We tend to anthropomorphize a range of different technologies. So when you look back at toys from a few decades ago, like Tamagotchis and Furbies, you had people who were actually identifying and connecting with these almost as if they were real pets. Even though they were simply machines, they didn't have any sense of awareness. They didn't have any understanding of self and other. And yet we tended to fill in the gaps and assign or attribute certain qualities to them that they didn't actually have. So I think that's going to be another element of this, the progression of effective computing as we move into the coming decades.
This brings up another interesting question, that being, would we even be able to tell for sure if an artificial intelligence was experiencing emotion versus simply simulating the experience of emotion?
That's an excellent question, and it really goes back to major issues in philosophy around consciousness itself, in which it's often explored and talked about within philosophy that we truly can't know for sure if any other entity other than ourselves is conscious, is experiencing true self-awareness. This goes back to Descartes and has been talked about by many different people through the decades. And it applies in many respects to the question of identifying consciousness within machines as well. Consciousness, self-awareness, emotion, and so forth. All of these are going to be interrelated and going to be very, very difficult to know very definitely if a machine is or computer program is experiencing this. That said, I think that when you consider that consciousness is made up of many different things, it is not just one amorphous quality of human experience, that there are parts of that that we actually may be able to test more easily with a computer program because of the way we're able to interface with it as opposed to how we interface with other human beings.
Let's go on to a different area, and that is how AI might affect the world of work, particularly with emotional intelligence. One of the people you quote in your book happens to be a recent interview subject in this podcast, Ian Pearson. And he basically recently wrote a blog post, which I discussed with him. It was in his Futurizen blog, stating that AI will create many, many jobs, at least in the short run. And one of the three main reasons he suggested was because it lacks human empathy and the ability to read emotions. Is this somewhat in direct conflict with what you're suggesting, or are we talking different time frames? How would you assess that?
That's really an interesting question, because yes, I'm familiar with Ian's position on that, and certainly have great respect for his perspective on how that's going to develop. I kind of sit in a little in between where he is and where a number of other writers and economists are with regard to just how disruptive AI is going to be to the labor market. I think it's going to be very strongly it's going to have a strong impact, but I don't think it's going to be to the degree that we see in certain reports, such as the Oxford paper from a couple of years ago that was talking about 46% of jobs going away due to automation, computerization, AI, and so forth. But as we saw during the Great Recession of 2008, that we really don't have to have 46% of jobs go away to be able to have an enormous impact and downturn on the economic engine of both a national and a global level. So to come back to the specific impact of emotion on this, I think that it's true that there are going to be a number of new jobs, and there's going to be new value, perhaps additional value, placed on the on human emotional capabilities. But that said, I think it's going to take a lot longer for both people and the overall economic system to shift in relation to the technologies that are going to be coming online and disrupting at a much, much faster pace. So it's a little bit of a quibble, but I half agree that yes, there will be a number of new jobs that arise out of the qualities that are most distinctly human that we can bring to whatever role, whether it's a nursing, teaching, different types of psychotherapy or other roles where we have a level of emotional connection that systems and machines simply cannot or won't have for a good few decades. But I'm in question as to whether that and the other factors mentioned could offset all of the loss in the shorter time frame anyway.
Richard, thank you for your time today, and I'm hoping maybe at a future date we can get you back to discuss more of this, particularly some of the implications and some of the additional applications for effective computing. Otherwise, thank you for joining me, and congratulations on a great job on the book.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and good luck with all of your podcasts.
Writing in the New York Times Book Review, no less a personage than technology guru Ray Kurzweil said, "Yonk provides a compelling and thorough history of the interaction between our emotional lives and our technology." Further, he goes on to say that Yonk describes today's emerging technologies for understanding our emotions using images of facial expressions, intonation patterns, respiration, galvanic skin response, and other signals. The heart of the machine is a must for anyone concerned about the future of artificial intelligence and its potential effects on the human condition. Links to the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as to Kurzweil's New York Times review, are available on the Seeking Delphi webpage for this podcast. In the news this week, the City Council of Atlanta, Georgia passed a unanimous resolution to transition the city to 100% renewable energy sources by 2035. The aim is to use wind, solar, and other fully renewable non-carbon-based methods.
The measure also commits government-owned buildings to a goal of 2025 for achieving this aim. SpaceX announced an ambitious project, ambitious being about the only way they know how to do things, to launch a swarm of mini satellites to provide global internet access in 2019. And finally, the University of Houston's Graduate Foresight Program recently held its annual get-together of students, faculty, alumni, and friends of the program. Did you ever wonder what it sounds like when futurists get together? Here's what it sounded like when I hit a few of them with a quick question midway through the kickoff dinner. All right, so we're talking about robot brothels, self-driving cars, virtual reality. I'm going to take a little quick survey here. What do you think is going to be the hot topic 1 year from today?
Well, I think next year we're already thinking about scanning the fringe. Like, where does the fringe of the future look like? Where do you find it?
What do you think? A year from now, what are the hot topics going to be?
I think it's going to be how we recover from the war and what happened over in Korea.
1 year from now, what do you think?
I'm afraid to answer. I think the Luddite movement's interesting.
1 year from now, what's going to be?
What's the question? I'm sorry.
1 year from now, what do you think the hot topic at this meeting is going to be? The hottest topic?
Probably future of work. You know, I think that it's going to be running up the issues curve a little bit more and more. As futurists, how do we really begin to offer guidance to entering into like the next era of work and transacting value?
Dimitri, question of the moment. What do you think is going to be the hot topic at this meeting 1 year from today?
Flying cars.
Okay. Quick answer. Eric, 1 year from today, what do you think the hot topic will be at this meeting?
I think the hot topic will be some climate disaster.
Any specific idea what it might be?
Involving water.
In case you're wondering, there were a few margaritas mixed in with those answers. My thanks to guest Richard Yonk. My technical assistant is Mohammed Marouf. Until next time, I'm Mark Sackler.